Dr. Murray Howe is author of 9 Lessons I Learned from My Father. He's also head of sports medicine imaging at Toledo Radiological Associates and ProMedica Health Systems Sports Care Program. He is the son of Gordy Howe. And he's written a book, as I mentioned, 9 Lessons I Learned from My Father. And as I said before our break, it is it's poignant, it's inspiring. At times it's funny. A lot of times it's funny. The Gordy sense of humor, which, you know, I'm of the age where I watched most of Gordy's career, and actually I can't even. I mean, I saw a lot of Gordy in the WHA because we used to go to WHA games in Winnipeg. So I was lucky enough to see the Howes play together. Gordy really comes across in this book, and we're very pleased to be joined by Dr. Murray Howe. And Murray, you know, I was thinking about this as I was prepping for this. You know, you grew up sharing, you and the family, the whole Howe family, you shared your father throughout your life, from the time you were born to the time you were a young child, teenager. Gordy was a very public figure. He was a guy a lot of Canadians loved. He's a guy a lot of Canadians, as I found out when we opened the phone lines and the day your father passed away, apparently a lot of Canadians are mad. But, you know, after sharing a man with so many people for so long, was it difficult to sit down and share some more even after he'd passed on by writing the book? You know, was there a point where you thought, yeah, I just need to kind of, I need to have Gordy to myself, or we need Gordy to ourselves for a while before we put more of it out there?
You know, both of my parents were always all about giving everything that they could to others. And so I think that just, we kind of continued that on as a family. I never get tired of sharing, you know, my dad and, you know, really the intimate stories and how much he meant to me. I loved him so much, and I admired him so much that for me, it's purely a labor of love to continue to just, you know, share with others all the things that he was to me, all the things that I saw in him that were so unique and so beautiful. So, you know, for me, I never felt like I wanted to hold back. I felt like I wanted to bring more. When I gave the eulogy, it was supposed to be 20 minutes. And so I said, okay, I'll make it 20 minutes. And I kind of lied to priest Father JJ, and because I knew it was going to be more like 30. But I really could have spoke for 12 hours. Mm-hmm. There was just so many things that I thought were important to share with my dad, you know, about my dad, but I had to kind of pare it down. So,
you know, he was such a huge figure, both physically and, you know, obviously a figure as an athlete, but man, he really loved his family. You know, the thing that really runs through this book, first of all, the number of times that a Howe family member is with him when these stories happen.
Yeah.
If somebody is there, whether he's playing a prank on somebody or he practice and he shoots a puck at you or you're skating, all this. And I guess it kind of makes sense because he did end up playing with Mark and Marty as well. But do you ever wonder how on earth this guy was able to balance all that?
You know, I think it really just came down to priorities, and his priority was people, especially his friends and family. But really it was everybody. I mean, he just died to his own needs and just reached out to everybody. So the second that he walked in the door, you know, after a game or practice, he was present for us. And he made sure that he would listen to us and, you know, get a rise out of us by, you know, playing some little trick or whatever. I mean, he was really, really there for us. And he received so much joy from that. I mean, that was something we learned in the last year of his life, is how important it was for him to be able to interact with others and make their day, because that in turn then made his day. So we tried to engineer his days so that he would be exposed to as many friends and family and fans as possible. And that would just light him up, and he would light them up. And it was just a phenomenal experience for everybody.
How hard was it for the family to maintain a balance as, you know, in Gordy's final days between privacy, keeping people aware, because I'm sure, you know, there were legal and other reasons people needed to be aware of what was going on. And of course, the public concern for news about Gordy. How difficult was that just to, and I don't want to turn it into something cold, but to manage, because basically it had to be managed when someone has dementia or is sort of gradually going away. You've got to manage their life and you got to manage the situation. How hard was that for the family?
You know, it was easier than it might have been normally, because my dad had been so good to the media his whole career, and he was accessible. And you know, he gave you whatever you needed. And so because of that, there was a real respect and deference that was offered, I think, to our family. And so we worked through the Red Wings, who were just so essential in helping us to be able to communicate to the world, kind of saying, you know, he's had a stroke and, you know, here's what he's doing now, that type of thing. And so we didn't get a lot of additional, prying in there. The media was satisfied with that. And we were really, really thankful for that. And that really was the case right down to the very end. The only issue we ever had was about a half hour after he passed away, I had a knock on the door, and it was a television news crew. And fortunately, one of the bodyguards, my dad's caregivers, we call them the bodyguards, they answered the door and told the news crew to get lost, because, you know, father just passed away literally that moment. And but short of that, there was always, as I say, a mutual respect that was there. So it was very easy for us to be able to provide the information that we wanted in the venue that we, you know, wanted to that would still basically, you know, maintain some respect for dad.
Yeah, one of the first lessons I learned when I started writing sports in Winnipeg, Hal Sigurdsson, who was my sports editor, and was a guy who was old school. And I remember one of the things he was always big on, you know, you follow the proper reporting channels, you do all your diligence. But I remember him telling us one time, a couple of the young guys, we gone out for drinks with him, and I remember him saying, and here's the other thing that no one's going to tell you. He said, you don't ever have to be the first person to report that somebody passed away.
Yeah.
And it was, and I've always kind of, you know, at the time I thought, okay. But it was, I think it says a lot about Gordy that people, I think a lot of people kind of took comfort in that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And also, quite frankly, I think, you know, people, I mean, Gordy just seems so indestructible, you know, and even, I mean, when he was in Saskatchewan, when you guys flew back there and you saw Gordy, I still thought, God, that guy's still huge, you know. And of course, then you hear stories about guys who played with Gordy in his final years and how Gordy would take his shirt off and the young guys would look down and go, oh my God, I got some work to do. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because your training, you've seen your father very personally. I mean, you've seen CAT scans, you've seen X-rays, you understand what you're like. I could look at them and I wouldn't, you know, I know, okay, that'd be a bone, that looks like a hand, but you've been able to see the bones of your dad. You probably have a better grasp of just how physically strong this guy was than anybody. But at the same time, it might also be kind of a burden, isn't it, to know all those details and to understand what you're seeing?
You know, again, because I loved him so much, and I was so committed. In fact, all of our family was so committed to making life, you know, the best that we could for our dad in the ways that we could. Mm-hmm. And so as a physician, I felt so privileged to be able to help him with his medical you know, his medical ailments. And, you know, some physicians don't really feel comfortable, you know, managing medical things for their family members, mm-hmm. you know, kind of conflict of interest or feeling like they're emotionally involved. But I felt like I knew my dad so well. I knew what he needed, what he wanted, and I wanted to be, you know, his medical advocate. And as a radiologist, I was really fortunate that I could review all of his imaging and kind of say, wow, look at this. And, you know, this is why he hurts so much or whatever. And he truly was a medical phenomenon. I've never seen anything like it in practicing 31 years of radiology. The findings on some of his studies were so out there, especially his wrists. Those are the ones that really floored me.
How so?
Well, his wrists look like somebody had taken a sledgehammer and smashed all the bones in there so that you can't even make out individual bones. And what happens in one of the wrist bones, it has a certain blood supply that's really tenuous. And so if you fracture that bone, the blood supply can be broken, and then the bone collapses if you don't diagnose it right away. And sports medicine back then, that's pretty much, they just said, oh, you know, you hurt your wrist, you bruised it, you know, they tape it up, inject some cortisone and send you back out there, and that's it. They didn't have the ability to be able to detect those fractures back then. Mm-hmm. So the bones died in both of his wrists. So he had an operation. It was why he had to retire the first time for the Red Wings, is they removed a bunch of these pieces of bone from his wrists. And afterwards, really, you know, the bones are, they just don't function anymore. And people that have a wrist that looks like that on X-ray normally be somebody that has like a neurologic disease, like where they can't feel pain. Mm-hmm. You don't see it in normal individuals because they stop doing whatever it is way before their wrists get to that point. The fact that he could grip a stick and shoot a shot and play for 7 more years with wrists like that is just absolutely inconceivable.
You know, your dad was such a tough hockey player, and yet, you know, I remember we had, it was either Ulf Nielsen or Anders Hedberg on the show, and we were talking about it was Ulf. Thank you, Travis. It was, and he was talking about their early days in the WHA when they came over from Europe. And of course, everybody knew who Gordie Howe was, and he said, you know, we were scared of Gordie. He was Gordie Howe. I mean, we were scared of him. And he said, we played against him and he was really tough, but he, and he gave no quarter. But Ulf also said, you know what, with us, with the new European guys who came over, he was really fair. He'd whack you, but he really got the sense, you know, he said of all the guys in the WHA, when they came over to the WHA, all the stars that other than their teammates that embraced them, and sort of Gordie was one of them. And, you know, I think the word that comes to mind when I think of your dad, and it really comes through in this book, whether it's, you know, the life lessons, staying positive, being humble, it's just decency.
Mm-hmm.
He was a fundamentally decent human being.
He really was. He just had this code of, you know, of ethics to live by. I mean, the first lesson that I talk about is being honorable, and that's really, you know, it's a part of being decent. It's a part of being good in everything you do, trying to make the right choice, be the man, be the hero that everybody can rely upon and look up to. And he was so good at that. And, you know, he's often accused of, you know, being a dirty hockey player, but, you know, he created an atmosphere out there where he could be as successful as he dreamed of being. So he created some space by kind of sending a message that if you mess with me, you know, there will be a penalty to pay. Mm-hmm. But he never intentionally tried to injure a player.
Well, there
ever.
Was a means to the end, wasn't there?
There was definitely a means to an end, and he would never do something like, you know, spear the back of a player's calves where you might split the muscle, or kick their feet out from underneath them so they'd fall back and hit their head, or cross-check them in the neck, or something where it would be a permanent injury. But he would hit you with all the force that he had and make sure that you felt it. And that was a part of, that's how you survived 32 years.
You know, it's there's so many good anecdotes and stories wrapped through this book as well. The Gordy's sense of humor, to me, the one that really resonated, because I got to tell you, if anybody did this to me, I'd be so upset, was how he and some of his teammates would tear the last page out of a book. If somebody was reading, one of their teammates was reading a book when he wasn't looking, they would tear the last page out. And of course, nobody would tell him the person who finished reading the book. Then he'd come to the end, you go. There was such a playfulness about that, mm-hmm. that sense of humor, mm-hmm. wasn't there? And you know what? Yeah. And you have to, that's something you have to think about doing. You know, that's something you have to think about doing. Tell us a little bit about about the public perception of his sense of humor and the private perception of his sense of humor.
Yeah, for sure. I think anybody that ever met him would get a sense of, wow, this is a really funny guy. I mean, he could sense the humor in any situation. So it was always there, but certainly, with family or close friends, when we had more time together, then he had more time to set up a prank or whatever. And he just loved getting a rise out of you, in any way. And he was so good at executing it. It was absolutely amazing. You know, the one story where I'm skating alone at, Olympia Stadium while he's getting ready for practice, and, my feet just get knocked out from underneath me, and I look down the, ice, and he's raising his hands, score, and he just had fired the puck down and hit my skates mid-stride and knocked me on my keister. And, he obviously thought about that. He's in the dressing room. He says, wouldn't it be fun to, shoot this puck at Murray and knock him over and know that he could hit me on the first, try from the other end of the rink? I mean, how phenomenal it is to execute something like that and to, fire the puck with that much power to be able to knock you right off your feet. But also to know that, his 5-year-old son is going to see that as a huge honor to mm-hmm. have been, that he thought enough of me to actually step on the ice and fire that puck at me and get a rise out of me.
I thought one of the real poignant parts for me was, and I'm looking at page 109 where you talk about how your dad, for the longest time, he wasn't a hugger with the boys. You shook mm-hmm. hands.
Yeah.
And knowing Gordy, God, how many functions he must have gone to, how many hands he must have shaken. Like, that may be where the wrist injury came from, because he seemed to be shaking everybody's hands all the time. And I guess it would be a natural extension for him to shake hands. But mm-hmm. that to me is just told so well, and just kind of the time when Gordy started to hug people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's for a guy who spent so much time traveling, playing hockey and all that, I guess what really does come through here as well is just the amount of really close family memories mm-hmm. that you talk about. But again, as we said off air, I mean, it's not maudlin. And that's, you learn something about Gordy and you get a sense about Gordy from that. Do you think when you talk to people about your father, Murray, do you ever run into people who are kind of surprised that Gordy was that warm? Because I think a lot of people would view Gordy as, Mr. Elbows, the Howe hat trick. And
I think anybody that actually has met him is not so surprised, because they say, yeah, that's what he was like. He sat down with me for, a half hour, and he was asking me about my kids, and he remembered their names. And those are the kinds of stories that I hear over and over again mm-hmm. that show his warmth. But yes, for people that never met him, that's really one of my goals in the book, was to really bring that, the rest of the man, to those who didn't have a chance to meet him, and for future generations to say, wow, this was a guy who was one of the greatest athletes of all time, but he treated everybody else like they were kings. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we can all do.
I have to admit, I had no idea that you were a teammate of Wayne Gretzky's in Junior B or Paul Coffey. And you point out in the book that you also point out that you were selected last in the 1977 Ontario Hockey Association draft, player number 228, 20th round by the Windsor Spitfires. Your brothers went on to have, with all due respect, a more successful hockey career than you did.
Absolutely.
Did Gordy ever favor them because of that? Because they kind of followed in his footsteps? And, you know, I don't mean that necessarily in a negative way. Maybe favorite's not the right word. But did you ever get the sense there might have been more of an attachment from him to them because of that?
You know, he was really good at being Switzerland. He loved everybody. You know, he made our friends and neighbors feel like they were family as well. But with each of the kids, you know, you could never get a sense that one was the favorite. It was clear that Mark was the one who most, resonated with him or you know, wanted to emulate him. I mean, we all wanted to be him, but sure. Mark, it was pure hero worship from the day Mark was born. He so much, you know, felt my dad's, you know, on ice, you know, talents and wanted to imitate those. And Mark pretty much loved everything that my dad loved to do, the fishing, the golfing, any sport. And I liked doing those things a lot, but not to the degree that, you know, Mark was. He would miss school any day to be able to go and play, you know, play with my dad or just go down to the practice and watch him practice. I mean, it was true hero worship there. And so I'm thankful that my dad had at least one, one of his offspring that really truly loved his passion of hockey as much as he did. And because, you know, for any parent, you kind of want you'd like your kids to, you know, love to do the things that you love. And but they're their own persons and they choose their own things. But, you know, Mark was definitely a chip off the block. Marty was as athletically gifted, but just didn't have that same passion, I think, for hockey. But no, Dad was really good at making sure that we all felt equally loved and that he and my mom just respected our individual passions and talents. And you know, he got a kick out of it. You know, he always, you know, he said, oh, that's, you know, Murray, he's the smart one. Mm-hmm. And which was funny because actually, you know, all of my siblings were very bright, you know, kids.
Right.
But I just always had a book, you know, in my, you know, underneath my nose. And so he, you know, he always, you know, thought that was a neat thing. And of course, when I became a physician, he and my mom always bragged about, you know, which side of the family I came from because I was the first one to go to college. And, so I never felt left out because I didn't play professionally and I was glad that my dad had that opportunity to be able to do that with my brothers. That was such a neat thing. I only wanted the best really for him and for my brothers. I never really felt jealousy. I just felt pure joy that they were able to do this thing that was so amazing.
In the process of writing this book, and we're up against the clock here, so I'll make this quick, but in the process of writing this book, did you learn something about your father that, or maybe have something jogged in your memory about your father that you know, you'd forgotten in the process of going back and going through notes and writing this?
You know, that actually continues to happen. As I'm going along, I'm running into people every day that share stories with me about my dad that I never knew. And seeing more and more beautiful traits and sides to him that only reaffirmed how how brilliant he was as a person, and so I feel like the book is still being written kind of in my head in a way, and there's been many surprising moments, but all of them, you know, maybe in the end not being so surprising because he truly was one of a kind.
The book is titled Nine Lessons I Learned from My Father. It's by Dr. Murray Howe. Get it. It is, as I said, a terrific read, and it's timely anytime, but I can see a lot of people, mothers, fathers, reading this and giving it to their kids at Christmas. It really is a terrific book, and thanks so much. I know you've got a very busy day today. Thanks so much for spending time with us, Murray. I
Thank
really
you,
appreciate
Jeff.
It.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Murray Howe.